In the mid-19th century, a very colorful and somewhat controversial story began to appear in various sources, various svarim, most famously in the Tiferes Yisrael. The story goes, it's a kind of midrash, that in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, there was a certain king in some exotic country who had heard Shamu Amram Yergazun, Chil Achaz Yoshve Plushes. He had heard about the great Moshe Rabbeinu, and he wanted to find out for himself, who is this Moshe Rabbeinu? He lived far away, there was no Instagram, so he sent a portrait artist to go and take a picture to paint Moshe Rabbeinu's portrait. The fellow went, the fellow was a master portrait artist, he traveled, he drew a picture of Moshe, brought it back to the king. So the king said, okay, I see Moshe Rabbeinu. He showed it to his experts in physiognomy, who were able to analyze character from looking at the face. The people looked at it, they were a little surprised, they had trouble believing it. They said, what do you want? You told us this is Moshe Rabbeinu, a person like this. He looks from his face, wicked, arrogant, greedy, capricious, suffused with every known vice. This is from Professor Schneer Lyman's translation of the Tiferes Yisrael's account. And the king couldn't believe it. He said, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. I've heard so much about him. And the artist said, this is his picture. This is accurate. I'm good at my job. And the physiognomist said, well, we're good at our job, too. This is a person who's a Rasha, a Mushchas. He has every bad midah, every bad vice. So the king couldn't understand what was going on. The king traveled to meet Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He saw, indeed, the picture was accurate. The portrait was a good likeness of Moshe. So he said, what's going on here? You're Moshe Rabbeinu, and this is your picture, and this is what you look like. This is what you should be. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. I wasn't born Moshe Rabbeinu. I was not born, because I'll say he was born Mohol. There was light that filled the house. That's one tradition. But according to this version, the Tiferes Yisrael's version, he said, I wasn't born Moshe Rabbeinu. I was born a person who had every taiva, who had inclinations toward every vice, every bad midah. And through working on myself, through Musar, through character development, I overcame it. I became Moshe Rabbeinu, but I didn't start out like that. The story itself is very controversial. First of all, as a historical matter, doesn't appear in Jewish sources until the 19th century about Moshe Rabbeinu. It appears in Jewish sources in the time of the Rishonim, about Aristotle, about philosophers. It appears in pagan sources, in Cicero, about Socrates. So it's not historically apparently a Jewish story, but the more interesting question is the hashgaf of the story correct? And do we look at Moshe Rabbeinu, should we look at Moshe Rabbeinu as someone who was born a mushchas, was born with every netiyah toward ra, and overcame it through personal development or not? Or do we prefer to believe that Moshe was born a hero, a moral hero, someone who was a tzaddik and a Baal Midas and a Baal Musar and everything? So the Tiferes Yisrael clearly believed that the story was a positive story about Moshe. Calls it a delightful account. He believed that this was something that was good to say about Moshe, that he was not born a great person, a nice person, but that he developed into one through force of character. And the truth is, even though the story appears relatively late in Jewish sources, there are earlier Achronim who also understand that Moshe Rabbeinu was not born a tzaddik yisod olam. The Moshe Rabbeinu was born an unpleasant person and was able to develop himself through force of character or through Yirat Shamayim. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says in the beginning of Dvarim, it says Asher Diber Moshe Isha Elokim, that Moshe is called the man of God. Moshe, in other places in Tanakh, in Chazal, in Rishonim, is held up as the ultimate Baal Midos, Ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. The Rambam explains that when the Torah describes Moshe as being an Anav, Anava was the pinnacle of Midos, that the Rambam explains that the distinctions, gradations of Nevuah between different Nevi'im are rooted in the idea that the Aspaklaria Ha'meira, Aspaklaria She'ena Ma'ira, that the more bad character traits a person has, the more cloudiness, the more occlusions there are between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe had the highest level of development of Midos, he was nearly perfect, and he had a couple of minor sins, but he was basically perfect, and that's why his Nevuah was Pe'el Pe'b, Amarav Lo Bechidos. That was a reflection of his development in Midos, in Tzidkus. And the Ish Moshe Anav Ma'od, Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says, it says Ish HaElokim, many ways to understand a phrase like Ish HaElokim. The Aruch Chaim says it means the same idea. Moshe was not born naturally a humble and pious and righteous person. It means that through being an Ish Elokim, through his commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through his commitment to Avodas Hashem, to doing the Ratzon Hashem, that's how he became Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how he became the great person that he was. He reached the highest levels of Nevuah, the highest level of Tzidkus, of perfection of Midos. It was all through Ish Elokim. It was not through naturally being born a refined character. Again, there were those who felt the story was problematic, aside from the technical historical question of whether it's true or not, or just made up, or borrowed from the non-Jews. There were those who felt that it was somehow improper, that it was not appropriate to say about Moshe Rabbeinu that he was born in Russia, but he was born a mushkas. But nevertheless, there are serious sources in our tradition that do accept that it is higher praise to say about Moshe that he was not born a tzaddik and that he made himself into one than to say that he was born on a lofty spiritual level. The Rambam says every person has to say Masayu Masai to Masia Vosai Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. That a person shouldn't say they're in a different league, they're born there and I'm born here. That every person should say that the sky's the limit. The Rambam pretty clearly acknowledges that people do have Natiyos, a person has Bechira, a person does have free will, but the Rambam does seem to concede a person can be born with a tendency toward one Midah or another, toward bad or good, toward different extremes on the scale of Midas, but there's no Hechrach, there's no compulsion, there's no predestination, and a person has the ability to overcome that. Some Rishonim explain that when the Torah says that Hashem hardened Paro's heart, so Rashi brings the standard Midrashic shot, the Rambam learns this way, that Hashem actually deprives him of his free will, even though generally people do have free will, but sometimes Hashem will take it away. But other Rishonim learn differently. Other Rishonim learn that Paro, from beginning to end, had free will. When the Torah says Hashem hardened Paro's heart, there are many different ways to explain that, but some understand that it means that Hashem gave him a predisposition toward being the stubborn villain that he was. Paro had the choice to overcome that. He didn't, and he fell back on his nature, which was how Hashem made him. Hashem hardened his heart. It was Paro's choice to overcome that. He didn't, and he became one of the great biblical villains. He remained one of the great biblical villains. But at the end of the day, that a person may have an atiyah, but that's his goal. Moshe Rabbeinu also had, according to these achronim, Moshe Rabbeinu also had an inclination toward bad character, but he overcame it because he wanted to, because he was committed to, and that's high praise of Moshe Rabbeinu from the perspective of these achronim. We find a similar idea about other biblical figures going back early to the early Achronim. Somebody asked Rabbi Levi ibn Chaviv, the Maralbach, one of the great Gedolim of Yerushalayim, a generation or so before the Beis Yosef, someone asked the Maralbach that the Chazal say in the story of Yosef and the wife of Potiphar, Chazal say that the Pasuk says, Vayavo habaisa la'asos malachto, in their final confrontation, their climactic confrontation between Eshes Potiphar and Yosef, it says, Yosef entered the house Lasos Malachto. So Rashi brings, there are two opinions in Chazal, and Gemara, and Midrashim. There are two opinions what Yosef had intended to do on that day. Some say his actual work, his accounting work, Cheshbonos. Others say he intended to sin. Others say he was on the verge of sinning with Eshes Potiphar until an image of his father appeared to him. He said, how can I do this? This is my saintly father, Yaakov. I heard the Reshiva once say that the Reshiva once said that it doesn't mean that there was a divine intervention, that Yosef was going to sin and that Hashem saved him. It means that Yosef, I don't remember exactly how he said it, I probably didn't fully understand exactly how he said it, but the idea is that this was all Yosef. Yosef was a person who thought of Yaakov, and he had this protection because he had safeguards. He had this connection to Yaakov, and he was saved. But the point is, it wasn't a done deal from the beginning. It wasn't a slam dunk. It wasn't easy. The Medrash and Chazal are clearly telling us, according to one opinion, that Yosef was on the verge of sinning, and he resisted. At the end of the day, he did the right thing. So they asked the Maralbach. They asked him, what pushed Chazal to say such a thing? We know that Chazal basically pile on. When we have biblical figures who are tzaddikim, Avraham Avinu, we find Chazal darshan every pasuk in the most interesting way to magnify his tzidkus. He did more than you think. And it says he was looking for guests. Hashem took the chama out of the nartika, and it was Avraham was just fanatically committed to having guests. And we find the Chazal typically they magnify every possible good thing about a tzaddik to make him into the greatest tzaddik in the world. And Rishayim, they dash in every pasuk in the most negative way. Avram and Bilam both saddle up their donkeys. Avram is just overwhelmed by love for Hashem to do a mitzvah, and Bilam is doing unspeakable things with his donkeys. So the What pushed Chazal, Yosef HaTzadik, Yosef is one of the great tzaddikim of the Torah, what pushed Chazal to say that he was on the verge of sinning? I give him credit, let's be down Lekav Schos, he was a great tzaddik, he did the right thing. Where did Chazal see in the Psukim that, why do they darshan this way, that he was on the verge of sinning? So the Achronim give different answers, but one approach given by the Maral Bach is, on the contrary, this is not a criticism of Yosef. Saying that he was on the verge of sinning, we're not trying to cut Yosef down to size and make him into a human being like the rest of us. We're saying, had Yosef resisted Eshet Potiphar because he wasn't interested in women, because he was just completely, completely didn't even see her, he didn't notice her, his head was in the clouds, okay, that's nice, but that's not a huge deal. That's not the Torah's lesson the Torah's trying to tell us. The Torah's trying to tell us Yosef was a young man. He had the desires and drives that men do, and he was on the verge of sinning. He had the Eshet Potiphar was very enticing, or whatever it was that she had. She had a power over him, and on the contrary, that's the great praise of Yosef, that despite the fact that there was nobody in the house, and despite the fact that he wanted her, and he could have had his way with her, and everything else that that might have pushed the 99 out of 100 other men in that situation might have done, what might have gone the other way, Yosef didn't. And then that's the shvach of Yosef, similar to what we saw about Moshe. That's the great praise of Yosef, that as a tzaddik he was able to resist. He was able to resist a temptation that might have ensnared most lesser men. Ratzvi Hirsch Chayas, the Maariv Chayas, makes this point also. He says he intended Aveira, nevertheless he was kovish as Yitzro, he overcame his evil inclination. That's a greater mile than someone who has no inclination to sin. Chazal talk about whether a Baal Tshuva or a Tzadik Gomer is a greater, is on a higher level, but from this perspective, someone who has the taiva and resists it, even if he could have gone either way, that's the greatest thing one can say. The greatest thing one can say about a person, that's what Chazal is trying to tell us. He could have done whatever he wanted, and nevertheless, he didn't. Rav Yaakov Emden has an autobiography, also a translation by, this one is translated by Dr. Schechter, or Jacob Schechter. Yaakov Emden has a biography, which is a very candid autobiography, He says all kinds of things about himself that most other major Achronim probably either never happened to them or wouldn't have said about themselves. He has one particularly hair-raising story he tells about himself. He says, I was even greater than Yosef. In a certain sense, I was greater than Yosef. He talks about he was alone in the house, he had a young relative, a young woman who was very attractive and who liked him, and he could have had his way with her any time, and he was sorely tempted, and he was repeatedly alone with her. Why he violated Yichud is a good question. The truth is, the Chasam Sofer asked that about Yosef. Why was Yosef violating Yichud? If Chasam Sofer goes so far as to say that the reason Potiphar gave some credibility to his wife's charge, even though this is kind of relevant, I guess, for the Me Too movement stuff. The reason Potiphar was willing somewhat to believe his wife, even though the evidence seemed to point toward Yosef's innocence, is that he was suspicious of Yosef. He says, why were you alone with my wife? Yichud is not proper. It's not proper according to Halacha. It's not proper, I guess, maybe according to their Minhagim. He says, you already lost your Cheskes Kashrus. You're already doing things that you shouldn't have been alone with my wife to begin with. Why he did it is a good question. Why Rebecca Emden allowed himself to be in this situation is a good question. But nevertheless, he says he was repeatedly alone with this woman, and he was very attracted to her, and she liked him, he thought, and he could have had his way with her at any point, and he didn't, he says, and he actually goes, and he's very proud of this, he says, he was very proud that he resisted, and he says that he was libi chal bekirbi, I didn't give in, despite the fact that I wanted to, I could have, and he says that from a certain perspective, it was a miracle similar to that of Joseph the righteous, and even slightly more so, he says. It was even greater that he was able to resist the temptation of the... Again, most Achronim don't write like this. Either they were, like the other Achronim say, and Moshe Rabbeinu never should have been on this level. Yosef was a tzaddik gomer, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in the same tradition of Yosef, of Moshe, according to some sources, the tzidkus of a tzaddik is that he has the same drives that we do. He has the same opportunities and urges that we do, when he overcomes them, and that's what makes him a tzaddik. That's what makes him a servant of Hashem. We find in general, when Chazal talk about tshuva, we've been discussing people who resisted temptation, who overcame what they could have been, and even people who did do things they shouldn't do, even people who did behave in ways that are unfortunate, that are chet, or that are close to chet. Nevertheless, Chazal emphasized that this happens even to great tzaddikim. We have one of the slichas of some Gedalia, one that I'm always very moved by. We say Haresa Derek Tshuva Lavas HaShoveva, that you taught the, you Hashem, you taught the way of Tshuva to the Jews who have strayed, who have sinned. You taught us, human race in general, you taught us about Tshuva. The half dozen stanzas of the Slichas, of the Slicha, then go ahead, they list various examples of famous biblical accounts of people who did, who sinned and did Tshuva. Some of them are not people we see as great tzaddikim. It begins with Adam HaRishon, that the Hashem created Tshuva, and Rosh Afros Tevel, Adam HaRishon, sinned with Eitz Hadas, and Chazar B'Tshuva, Ishon Hunsar, he did a terrible sin, he did Tshuva, Chazal say. Then he gives, then the next one is about Ta Gizo Dmei Achiv B'Shafcho, Adam's spawn, Adam's child, Cain killed Hevel. Hashem said Nav and Nod, but he did Tshuva also, and Hashem said Shvasayim Yukam Cain, and he did Tshuva too. The next stanza is a double stanza. The next stanza deals with two people, and it's interesting that the author of the poet here puts them together. Mechalel Yitzui Yoldo Asher Pachas Kamayim, a reference to Ruvain. Ruvain was Oz Chilalta Yitzui Allah Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. So Ruvain sinned with Bila, whether it was literally as the Pesukim say, whether as Chazal say, that it's not literally as the Pasuk says, whatever it is, Ruvain clearly committed some kind of sin involving Bila. Natoyu Raglov Kamat Lule Shafach Leif Kamayim, he would have been lost, he would have, you know, fallen off the path and been gone, if not for the fact that he did Tshuva, Shafach Leif Kamayim. Ruvain's Tshuva is not explicit in the Pasuk, it is discussed by Chazal, as we will see soon. And the next half of the stanza, Sarach Gur Aryeh B'Kadesha Hiba'inayim, Gur Aryeh is Yehuda, from again, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Kadesha Hiba'inayim is a reference to the story of Tamar. The Paitan is saying here that he sinned with Tamar. Avono Hoda V'Hechrata L'Tzedek B'Chath Moznayim, he confessed his sin, he was Moda. Those are the famous steps of Tshuva. Aziva Sachet, Vidui, Kabbalah L'Asid, so he was Moda to his Chait. And Hashem judged him favorably, v'hechrata l'tzedek b'chaf moznayim, that Hashem weighed him for tzedek, for righteousness, on the scale. The source, the precedent for this idea of linking Yehuda and Ruvain is a Gemara in Makkos. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu's brachas in Dvarim, it says that after Moshe discusses Ruvain, it says v'zos li Yehuda, there's a connection, v'zos li Yehuda, the pasuk is connecting what happened to Ruvain, what happened to Yehuda, and the Gemara in Makkos explains that Yehuda was given schar. Yehuda had a problem with the nidui of the fact that he was menad himself. I'll be menudil shnei olamos if I don't bring Binyamin back to you. But either way, it says Yehuda got schar. Yehuda received chen from Hakadosh Baruch Hu because he was the inspiration for Ruvain. Mi garam l'Ruvain sheyoda Yehuda. That it was Ruvain's tshuva was inspired by Yehuda's tshuva. Yehuda's tshuva, apparently from the story of Tamar, Ruvain's tshuva from his involvement in the sale of Yosef. It says that there are different sukkim that imply that Ruvain's tshuva for the Ma'aseh of Bila, Ruvain's tshuva from Yosef. So the Ruvain's tshuva for the Ma'aseh of Bila primarily, it says, Tosis brings even earlier Ruvain had already done tshuva. By Yashav Ruvain el Habar, Ruvain returned to the pit where Yosef was. He was doing tshuva for the story of Bila, Sak and Tinus. And Yehuda did Tshuva, and Yehuda was the inspiration for the Tshuva of Ruvain. That's why Yehuda gets schar for that, and that's why presumably the poet links them together. It's interesting that Chazal even felt that Yehuda needed Tshuva for the story of Tamar. In other statements in Chazal, they talk about how Yehuda was Modeh. He said, Sodka Mimeni. He confessed that Tamar was pregnant from him. It's not clear that it was Chait. It was embarrassing for him. He had to confess that he had done this, and it was it was a very embarrassing moment, and penny elavuz, and he had to confess it publicly. He did it to save her life. It's not so clear that was tshuva, rather than just swallowing some personal humiliation to avoid an innocent woman being killed. Nevertheless, Chazal understand that it was a form of tshuva, and that inspired Ruvain to do tshuva, and that's what we are noting in here in the Slichas. And in general, many commentaries have noted that the entire story of Malchus Beis David arises through one after another somewhat murky incident, somewhat dubious incident of often sexual transgression. We start with Tamar and Yehuda. We go down later. We have the story of Rus and Boaz, which is an odd story. We have the story of David. We have the story of David and Bathsheba, and so on. One story after another. Yishai, the Gemara has a story about one story after another. The Malchus Beis David emerges, Rus HaMoavia in the first place. You know, the whole thing is clouded in a kind of people are not born tzaddikim from birth and perfect. The entire lineage of Malchus Beis David has all these somewhat dubious incidents in its history. Many of the Mefarshim note this. They give different explanations. They'll be Kabbalah. Some of them give a kind of political explanation that the king has the tendency toward overweening arrogance and self-regard, and we want to remind the kings of Beis David, you know, you don't have such illustrious yichus, you come from some very dubious antecedents yourself. But one other perspective, Mashiach ultimately comes from this, one other perspective is, again, the idea of tshuva, that Yehuda, according to Chazal, his marriage with Tamar starts in a way that requires tshuva, and that David and Basheva is one of the famous stories of tshuva in Tanakh. Not sure why the Shlicha doesn't mention David and Basheva, but Chazal say that the whole story of David and Basheva was so implausible, so outrageous, it happened in the first place to be a model for tshuva, to be an inspiration for tshuva. So David does tshuva at length. It says that's Chazal say that's why Shaul lost the melucha and David kept it, because even if David's sins were more or greater, but he was moda. Again, he was moda. He did tshuva. And this can be the point, in one sense, that again, the Torah is showing us that great people, Malchus Beis David and Mashiach also, are not necessarily born perfect, they don't have perfect lives, there is a struggle, there is temptation. Sometimes they win at the last moment, sometimes they even do something wrong. At the end of the day, this lesson, and as embarrassing and unpleasant as it might be for the people involved, as we saw, why did Dr. Vemzin tell the story? Because he felt, presumably, it was inspirational for us. We should know that even great people are not, you know, sticks and stones, they're not rocks, they have human failings, and they overcome them, and that's the lesson for us. We have to recognize that you can be a tzaddik by having a Yetzer Hara and overcoming it. That may be the greatest titkus. Even if you've sinned, you can do tshuva. That's the lesson we all need going into the Yom Narah. May we be zocha to do tshuva and have a Gzardin Latov, a Ksiva V'Chsima Tova.